You are listening to Punk News Podcast number 297. Welcome back to the Punk News Podcast. This is Features Editor John Gentile, and we got two intelligent guys. We got two thoughtful guys. We got two ram-banging. We got two excitable, two thoughtful, two jacked-up guys. First of all, we are here with reviews writer Tom Trauma, who recently got himself in a bit of hot water. Tom Trauma, I believe you reviewed a show about a band called Restorations, and let me tell you, you were getting a spanking on Twitter for your Restorations review. Tom Trauma, do you stand by your words?
Absolutely. I thought you were going to say I'm getting a spanking from Adam White because I actually took a couple of cheap shots at him in that review. I don't know if he looked at it.
I didn't actually read our website.
I didn't figure.
We have a website?
I referred to you as a pretentious Canadian insider at one point, but that's all right, Adam. It's all in love.
So Tom Trauma taking a beating from the readers, but still holding by his point. That's old school punk rock.
I'm not on Twitter, so I didn't see that on the website. I know a couple of people have sort of backed up what I said, and I really wasn't negative as much as indifferent, which I don't know. Maybe that's worse.
This one was kind of the worst insult, though. You know what I mean? Like
you're from Philadelphia, John. What do you? Forget it. We won't get into that. Anyway, I'll check it out.
Anyways, we're also here with Managing Editor Adam White. Managing Editor Adam White, how are you doing tonight?
It's 420, John, 420!
420!
To celebrate 420, John, I have a gin. That's how you're supposed to do it, right?
Gin? Yeah, well, actually, I'm against marijuana.
Well, it's gin and soda because I don't have any tonic right now, but...
Not gin and juice?
No.
I was getting trippy today while I was driving because I was thinking it's 420, and I was thinking of this is, you know, we only see a very limited number of colors on the color spectrum. We only hear a very limited number of sounds on the sonic spectrum. So what we think of reality isn't really reality; it's just a small slice of the reality out there that's happening. And so that led me to think is. The only reason we know there's sounds that we can't hear and colors that we can't see is because we have the ability to detect those. How much other information and parts of reality are we missing because we don't even have the technology or even aware of the possibility of the existence of other elements that we can't detect whatsoever? And what does that mean if we're only getting, say, 1% of what's actually reality? That was my trippy 420 thought for the day, even though I wasn't toking.
There's a lot of science that answers so many of those questions quite clearly.
Is there really?
Yeah, there is. There's things called infrared waves.
No, I'm saying there's colors that we don't know what there are, and there's sound we don't know what there is. So what does it mean that we only actually perceive a small part of what actually is reality? And further, we know there's colors we can't see, and we know there's sounds we can't see, but what are there other things that we can't detect because we don't know to detect them?
Those are all the things that are giving you cancer.
Well, I thought it was the seven packs of Marlboros I'm smoking a day.
Well, that too. See, yeah, 420, smoking Marlboros, drinking gin. This is how you do it, right?
Anyways.
I don't know. I'm not super hip, but I assume this is what you do.
So anyways, speaking of being hip, you should always write us at podcast@punknews.org because that's what all the cool kids are doing. Don't smoke, kids. Write to the Punk News Podcast. Just say yes to the Punk News Podcast. Listen, last week we talked about the Story So Far guy giving the flying jump kick to the girl on the stage. We got a fair amount of email regarding that, and here's the email that we got. This is from I edited these fairly heavily because some of them were very long. We can't get to them all, so we're just going to read, I guess, the meaty clip. We're going to get to the punch line, if you will. This is from Maya. Maya said, John said that he thinks it's okay. John said that he thinks that it is okay to hit a stage diver if they are male. Why can't the rule just be it's not okay to hit anyone ever? And that's from Maya. This is from Kurt. Kurt said, I thought the kick was funny. If you get on stage, you take your chances. It's punk rock, not folk music. That's from Kurt. This is from Dragooth. When I got into punk, it was not a safe space. I appreciate that it's a safer space now. That is definitely for the better. But I think we are going too far. By removing all the exciting elements, be it a small hit of danger, it's not punk rock anymore. And this is from Mitchell. Mitchell said, the guys in the story so far are douchebags. If someone isn't on stage, ask them to get off. The jump kick was totally uncalled for. Screw those sexist douchebags. And then we got one more from Sunny. This is from Sunny. Let me pull this one up. Give me one second here. Pulling up Sunny's. Here we go. This is from Sunny. Sunny said, the story so far kick. The only thing the band did that I ever liked. And we've got a couple of other emails too. This is from Yinzer. And Yinzer says, I enjoy the podcast, especially John G. He is hilarious. Well, thank you, Yinzer. Thank you very much.
You made that guy up.
No, I swear to God, I did not. I really didn't.
No one likes you, John. Everyone thinks you Yinzer just keep likes talking me. About
that's
the Melvins.
That name sounds sort of foreign. Maybe something's being lost in translation.
Turns out that's like some obscure, like I don't know, Eastern European language. Like, dude's hilarious means I hate that guy. But listen, if I can make one Yinzer happy, then I've done my job, Adam. That's all that matters. If I can make a single Yinzer smile, that's all that counts.
Well, we know it'll be on your tombstone, man.
You can always reach us at podcast@punknews.org. Meanwhile, Adam White has been he's been telling me. One second, Tom Trauma. Briefly, you've been in the punk rock scene quite a while. What's your take on the story so far? Kicked heard around the world. You can take a pass if you want.
Well, here's my thought. If you're in the band, I've been the guy in the band, not in this big of a context, obviously, but if you are at all feeling threatened, I think you have a right to do whatever you got to do. But in this case, he clearly was not threatened. And the thing I'm going to say about this, he was being a jerk off, thought he was being funny. But the fact of the matter is, this isn't a punk rock concert, dude. This is a teeny bopper concert. This is something you send your 14-year-old to. You don't expect her to get kicked off the stage. This isn't a freaking, you know, this isn't a Napalm Death or a Negative Approach concert. This is teeny bopper shit. It shouldn't have happened. Guy's a jerk off. I said it before, and I'll repeat it. I'm going to go ahead and continue my 40-year boycott of whatever the hell the name of the band is.
That was funny. Tom Trauma had the comment of the week on that. He said, I'm going to continue my 40-year boycott of this band. I'll give that a comment an A+. Meanwhile, even though we're all joking around, Adam White's gone through some tough times. Adam White, what are your tough times?
You're an old geezer, so you can probably sympathize with this.
You just call Tom an old geezer?
Yeah. So I'm... The other day, I'm out in my garage, and I'm getting the recycling bins and the garbage and everything put together so I can bring them out to the street. And I open my garage door, and I'm standing there holding the blue box. I don't know, like what do you guys put your recycling in? Do you have like a blue box? Is that a Canadian thing?
Green box.
All right, so I got the blue box. It's full of cans and bottles and shit. And I'm standing there, and I look out at my street. My street, it's a really new like suburban-y kind of development, full of families and stuff like that, a lot of kids and everything. And there's this one kid from who lives across the street from me, and he's got to be, I don't know, he's probably like 13, 14, really. He looks older. I think he's only like 13, 14. So he comes by my house on a skateboard, and he's not going anywhere fast, and he's not. You know, trying to motor on the skateboard. He's not trying to jump or do anything. He's just fucking cruising. Slowly cruises by my house. He's wearing like a full body, like Adidas jumpsuit, like you would have seen in like an 80s rap video kind of Adidas jumpsuit.
Man, this guy's cool.
And I'm looking at this kid, and he's just fucking cruising by in his Adidas jumpsuit on a skateboard. And I'm standing there holding my fucking recycling, and I'm like, man, I'm never going to look as cool as that kid looks right now. There's nothing that I will ever do that is going to make me look as smooth as this guy's looking. All I got is my fucking garbage, and I got this bin full of diapers, and this kid is fucking top of the world as far as being smooth.
Already too old to leave a beautiful corpse for you to die tomorrow.
And I'm looking at this and I'm thinking like, I'm like, you know what? I will probably die without ever setting foot on a skateboard again. And not that I really ever did that before, but the time is over. And then I'm standing there for my recycling bin and I'm thinking, I'll probably die before I do lots of shit now. Oh man, why is this kid gotta look so cool? And oh, my mortality and my old dad lack of coolness all caught up with me at the same time. Fuck this kid, man. That's my crisis. What do you do about this?
Yet, so. But,
yeah. I'm going to go get a motorcycle tomorrow or something and just drive it on his lawn and be like, can you even get a motorcycle? You're underage. Go fuck you.
Beer in his front yard. Like, yeah, you can't buy beer yet. Can you, punk?
Sir, would you stop harassing my son, please?
Exactly. Pretty much. Oh, John, I'm, that's it. There's nothing I can do.
Yeah, but on the other hand, listen, Adam, wait. You got a wonderful family, wonderful kids. You got a house. You know, you're a man. You're a man. You ain't living in mommy's house. You know, you ain't getting an allowance. You're earning your bills. You're a man. When there's problems that need to be solved, you solve the problems. There's something to be said for that.
I feel like my problem might be lack of Adidas jumpsuit, but
dude, I wear track jackets. They really do make you feel cooler. Like I started wearing them probably about 8 years ago now. I honestly immediately felt cooler, and I've worn them since.
If I start dressing like the neighbor kid, then I gotta start hanging out on the street just to see if the neighbor kid sees me. Because if he sees me and gives me some look where he's like fuck you, old man. Then that's not going to work. Like, I need the neighbor kid's approval. I need to know I can pull it off.
Maybe, like, he'll still be living in his basement when he's 30. And then he'd be like, yeah, you're not so cool on your skateboard now, 30-year-old kid living in your parents' basement.
Honestly, yeah, but at that point, I'll be, like 68, right? And or something. And then whatever. Then he's going to be like, well, you've shown me, you half-dead, you know. There's no winning.
Honestly, though, I'm going to be honest, Tom. Even if he's living in his parents' basement when he's 38, if he still has that track jacket, he's still cool. I mean, he really is.
I just picture you, John, in like your maroon like tracksuit with a big gold medallion or like your big gold ram's horn. I have a picture of you as like, you know, who's the guy from like a gangster movie or something, you know? Nice Guy Eddie. You're like Nice Guy Eddie wearing your tracksuit around.
That's the thing. You don't wear the pants. You wear like jeans. But you don't wear the pants. You just wear the jacket, and you look cool.
You know, I guess I'll take your word for it.
I think what really made it work.
Denim and has several patches on it. So,
no, see, what made this work was how slow he was going on the skateboard, because he was going nowhere, like, and he needed the fact to go. That he had nothing nowhere.
But free time.
Like I have to take the garbage out, and then my kid is probably trying to, like, you know, tear the copper wiring out of my house or something, right? This kid has nowhere to go, and that's perfectly cool.
It's a bummer, dude.
I don't know.
You should sabotage his skateboard or something.
I don't want to screw him up though, because like he's winning, right? Like, I just want to be like shine on, you crazy diamond. Don't let me fuck you up.
Adam, you're winning with your recycling and your sensible car. You're winning, dude. You're all right.
Adam, you should do like Karate Kid, but in reverse. Like, teach me, kid. Teach me to be cool. I think we just wrote a Will Ferrell movie. Adam, what, you got any good songs to ease you out of this midlife crisis?
Oh, God. You know what? My song's pretty low fidelity. Let me run it last because I don't want to turn people off.
I'm sorry, Tom Trauma. Listen,
yeah, someone else jumped
in. Be the Mr. Miyagi to Adam White being Ralph Macchio. Teach him in your ways. How can you teach Adam in your ways?
I got a song that makes me feel young because it's a real throwback to the mid '90s when I was, I'm not gonna say young and cool, but younger and cooler probably. There's a new split coming out from Jailhouse Records. It's got two bands from New Jersey. It's a full-length split. And the bands are Blanks 77 and The Parasitics. And the Blank 77s were kind of popular in the mid-90s, like the Pogo Punk revival. And they were like Maximum Rock and Roll darlings. And they're back with their first new recorded material in a long time. And this song makes me feel really good. It's called Up the Punks.
Here's to the young punks that sing and dance. And to the old punks way in the back. Ain't got no money and never have. We play for beer and cash for gas. It's what we live for. It's what we bleed. So up the punks!
And that was Up the Punks by Blanks 77, a Tom Trauma favorite. Let's read some news. Here's a surprising factoid that came out recently. UK polling company ICM Unlimited recently interviewed and did some research on UK vinyl record buyers. Here's what they found. 48% of UK vinyl record buyers don't actually listen to their vinyl records. Similarly, 45% of vinyl buyers listen to the album first on a streaming service and then decide to buy the record. So apparently streaming services have at least some influence on whether or not people will buy vinyl records. But I think the more shocking thing is pretty much half of people that buy records in the UK don't actually listen to them. I wonder if it's similar here in North America or if it's different. Adam White, do you play your vinyl records? What do you think of this factoid?
I do. Absolutely. I mean, hell, like we got home from Record Store Day, which is supposed to be the day when you're buying all like the super collectible bullshit. And I immediately was playing records at home. So I don't know if that makes me atypical or not. But I mean, I want to put on my business hat and go, well, there looks like there is an opportunity to sell 48% of these record buyers a record player. So if I was, U-Turn Audio or one of these upstart vinyl or turntable companies, I'd get in there and try to sell something. I do find this kind of surprising, only in that you would figure that even if you were, because I think that the immediate reaction is that this is these are the speculators and the posers, and you know, these are everyone that were rushing out the comic stores in like 1993 to buy like Death of Superman, and you know, in a polyvinyl bag that they'd never open kind of thing.
Are you referring specifically to the white issue of Death of Superman that came in a white polyvinyl bag?
I may be. I was around at that time. These are the people that are running out there and buying records, but or these are the people that are buying them specifically because they're going to go home and, you know, see what they can flip them on Discogs or eBay or whatever. I don't know if that's necessarily true. It's quite possible that, you know, people are, I would imagine that a good percentage of these people are buying records with the intention of playing them. It's just that it's less a, you know, it's definitely less likely that, you know, everyone is by default going to have a, you know, a stereo with a turntable in their house. If you want to, like, you know, I'm thinking about myself as a student. Now, I was one of these students that did have a turntable, but there was a definitely a time when, you know, I was living in a dorm and buying records because I wanted to, but I, you know, I didn't have a active working turntable, you know, with me. So, you know, I could have fallen into that percentage at some point in my life. So, I don't know. I kind of want to give humanity the benefit of the doubt and say that they're not just buying these things to put them on a shelf. Because if they're doing that, you could totally just go to a flea market and buy like 600 records for $40 and just put all those on your shelf and then probably get black mold. So, I don't know. Don't do that because you get black mold.
But don't you think a lot of these people are buying those same crappy records that you could buy cheap at the flea market? They're just buying like the nice 180 gram vinyl pressing of what did we say? Fleetwood Mac Rumors again.
We keep picking on that record. Well, we picked on like it last 20 week.
20 million copies. Somebody's buying it.
I don't know. I mean, if you were going to be, let's say all of a sudden, if for whatever reason, all of a sudden, my dad, you know, had an actual midlife crisis and decided that the way that he was going to be cool was to get in on this vinyl revival thing and start buying. Yeah. Get a skateboard and a tracksuit. Yeah, my dad is going by in a, yeah. Okay. So my dad goes out and he gets a skateboard and an Adidas tracksuit and and some records. Why, if at that point you were just, you know, using your adult disposable income to try to be cool, why wouldn't you at the very least go buy one of those like shitty Crosley turntables or something that they sell at record stores so that you could at least, you know, if you're going to, you know, display these things for status, then you also have a turntable on the table for status. That's what I can't quite figure out here. Like if you're going to buy records and, well, I guess what they're, maybe I'm misreading this. I'm reading this as these people do not have a turntable. I suppose they may have a turntable. They just do not listen to the records they buy.
No, actually, the way they specifically determined it was they do not have a turntable that they currently actively use. So it's a little ambiguous.
Okay, so I'm gonna read that as meaning they have no means of playing the records, and that so that yeah, if it's the other thing, and people are just buying things to own them and put them on a shelf. I can't read. I don't have a good read on that because I've never been a person that's a collector to that degree. Like, I don't doubt that those people exist. You know, this in the same kind of people that would, like, you know, they would go buy, like, I assume there are people like go out and like they buy like packages of like baseball cards, but they don't open them because I don't know, it's better. Or like toys. That's a good example. Yeah, people go and they buy, you know, action figures because they're going to collect them, but they're not playing with them as toys. They're just collecting them. So they want to keep them in their original box. Like, are there people that want to keep their records in their like original plastic shrink wrap?
I think what it is I think it's people that buy them as trinkets, as artifacts, and maybe use the digital download. I don't even know if that's really that big of a problem. I mean, first of all, people buying more records means artists are getting more money, hypothetically, so I'm all for it. Second, the more people that buy records, the more likely records will be made, the more likely I will be able to get records that I want to get, so I'm all for that. So are people buying the records and not listening to them? Possibly just to look cool, but that's fine with me. I mean, I'm happy to piggyback off other people's purchases just to get my own personal enjoyment. I mean, I'd rather people buying records and not listening to them than them not buying records or CDs at all, you know?
There was two things to this. One was that people will stream something to make sure they like it before they buy it, which you can hardly blame people when a record is between, you know, $18 or $30. You can hardly blame them for doing that. But the fact of the matter is, if you're going to pay $10 for the download, why not pay $20 for the record and have the record? I've long suspected that people aren't actually listening to their records, and this sort of vindicates me to a certain extent. But
well, I wonder if it's like, you know, they, you know, like for me, like, because I'll do that, but I'm not going onto iTunes and
listen to the digital. I just
yeah, but like for me, like I'll definitely listen to something before I buy it, but it's unless I'm aware of like the bands or the label maybe, but the I'm definitely not going onto iTunes and paying, I don't know, $12 to download the MP3s. It's more like I'll go on to YouTube or something and listen to some of the songs and then go buy it. Where
you'd rather buy a record for $20 than a download for $10. I would, at least.
Oh yeah, I mean I never buy downloads. It doesn't feel like a great, and it doesn't feel like a tangible use of my money.
Our age, Adam, even you guys being younger than me, you know, we still, because like my kids, teenagers, man, they don't give a crap about having a shelf full of stuff. Everything's digital to them. You know, we still grew up in an era where we still bought everything physically and still opened it up and looked at it and got a certain amount of joy out of doing that. But these young kids, forget about it.
There is something that I kind of admire about that, where like if all of a sudden, you know, shit goes down and they need to get the fuck out of Dodge, you just, you know, you pick up your laptop bag and your iPhone and you just, you know, you hit the forest.
Really?
And you have all your possessions.
As opposed to me, where my basement flooded and I literally had to take out my whole garage with boxes of just my records and CDs. But, oh well.
Margaret, get the boxes! It's a flood! Floods are coming!
Like, you know, like if you're trying, if like the barbarian horde is at your door and you got to stop and try to lug, you know, 300 boxes of, like 300 records in milk crates out of your,
I can see that, like Vikings are like kicking down Tom's door with axes and the spiked helmets, and he's got like these records under his arms. He's climbing out the window. Not Earth AD, not Earth AD.
No, take Earth AD. Just leave me walk among us. It's fine. Yeah,
I'm thinking of that scene in Shaun of the Dead where they're throwing records at that zombie that's in their backyard. Oh God, what are we talking about? The people not buying things. I don't know. I don't want to get on a high horse about this because I think John, I'm like you, or like, hey, I'm much happier with stories being that, you know, hey, people are buying music but maybe not listening to it, as opposed to no one's buying music, you know, the ship is sinking. So yeah, whatever, if people don't want to listen to their records, that's their prerogative, I guess. I mean, for me, like, that's, to God, that's the joy of it. Like that's what I want. I mean, like I want to listen to my things. I want my you know, I want my stereo to sound really good and be loud, and I don't know.
Yeah, but young kids don't even care about that, you know? They listen to a lot of music, but it all sounds like crap. I know. I mean, how many of us still have stereos? Like, home stereos? Not many.
Hey, you know what? That's my thing. That kid with the fucking skateboard is listening to probably music on his earbuds.
He's got shitty-sounding MP3s. He's never had a bass rumble so loud that it loosened his bowels.
I hate to tell you guys, though, like, having a really nice stereo, that's like the signifier that of like dad rock, like being overly concerned with stereos. Like that's the dad rock thing.
No, I'm not that bad, but my dad had a stereo when I was a kid when he played his 70s records. Oh, he could shake the windows out. I don't have anything like that.
But your dad would have called it his hi-fi, right?
Oh yeah, of course.
Dude, stereos rule, man. I love stereos.
Yeah.
Oh, we're all so old. Well, anyways, yeah. So
I listen on headphones than I do my stereo too. You know, it's just the way it is.
All right, so we're talking about digital. We're talking about vinyl. Let's talk about everyone's favorite music service, Tidal. So if you recall, Jay-Z, Kanye West, and a bunch of other artists, they recently launched Tidal, which is a new streaming service that was at least in part artist owned and high fidelity and this and that. Well, now they're being sued. There is a proposed class action lawsuit that was filed recently on behalf of a Tidal user named Justin Baker-Rett. The crux of the suit is that Kanye West promised that Tidal would be the only place where people could hear his new album, The Life of Pablo. However, following that statement, West or his record label made the album available in other places, including Tidal's competitor iTunes. So one portion of the suit's prayer for relief is the deletion of data of every user that listened to the album via Tidal. And the suit claims that the information alone is worth $84 million. John, I'm of course going to throw this to you because you are the legal scholar in the room here. But really, outside of this guy's complaint, can you confirm that prayer for relief is a real legal term?
It absolutely is. I wrote the article. That's prayer? What it's called, prayer for relief. That's what it's called.
Really?
You can call it prayer for relief. You can call it request for relief. But generally, it's called a prayer for relief. Yes.
That's bewildering. That's super archaic. I mean, that's weird.
The American, well, I mean, most legal systems are archaic. I mean, really, pretty much every legal system used across the world, at least the Western part of the world, dates back to the Roman Empire. I mean, and that's true.
I just figured that there would be some like neutered middle of the road, you know, bureaucratic terminology for all these things, and that prayer for relief makes it sound like you're out on a in a rainstorm on a cliff face, you know, screaming to Odin that he would come down and smite. We're talking a lot about Vikings this episode, right? We're like the, I don't know. It's
that's the terminology, Tim. I don't know what to tell you. It's called a prayer for relief. Sometimes they call it a request for relief
request for relief. That's fairly innocuous, but prayer for relief, that's Jesus. Especially when you're praying for relief from your title. Smite here. Oh God! All right. So what's going on here?
Well, I guess by this point, does everyone know what a class action is? Do you think I need to explain what a class action is?
That's what got me $11 from Sony for rootkitting my computer back in the day.
I'll be very briefly. Class action lawsuit is when a whole bunch of people get together to sue a company for something that's so small that one person wouldn't normally sue over because it's not worth the time. The purpose being not to reimburse the people that got taken advantage of, but rather to stop a company from basically cutting corners. That is doing something that no one's going to sue them over because it's too small and getting away with it. That's the purpose of a class action. And a class action, the actual winners, which is people that are a member of the class, usually get something that's very little and isn't even worthwhile. Meanwhile, the law firm often gets millions and millions and millions of dollars. That's why firms do class actions, because they might get $20 million, but I might get $2 off my next Ticketmaster purchase, even though they raise the service fee $5. Thanks, Ticketmaster, you douchebags. Anyways, what makes this interesting is Kanye is a part owner of Tidal. If Kanye was not a part owner of Tidal, you might have a different result. But he's a part owner of Tidal. He went on Twitter, he went into a public forum and said, Tidal is the only place where you can get my new album. It's a part owner. Like I said, I think this is a pretty slam banger. I think it's a slam dunk. I would say this most likely is breach of contract or basically fraud or intentional or negligent interference with economic relations. So I think it's a pretty clear-cut case. And it's really just going to come down to the settlement. And obviously, the members of the class, they'll probably get, you know, a month of title free or something stupid. And the attorneys will get a lot of money. But I think it's pretty clear. And it's interesting that Kanye is famous for running off his mouth. And the question is, does he really know what he's doing? Like, is he a master manipulator or is he just some crazy guy? And I think maybe he's just a crazy guy because they're getting bit kind of hard here. Although, honestly, Kanye probably won't feel any of the pain. Tidal will, which is already in financial distress anyways. So that's what's happening. So I think it's pretty clear, to tell you the truth. I would further point, though, I'm not a fan of the concept that services are the only place where you can get a certain album, and I'm glad that model failed from an economic perspective, because I don't want the music industry to be a place where if you subscribe to this service, that's how you get this album. But if you subscribe to this service, that's how you get that album. I don't like fiefdoms in my music selection. I like anyone can get any album for a reasonable price. I think that's a much better system. I think it's a system that is more respectful of artists and music listeners, and frankly, a less scaring, less controlling system. Is the information worth $84 million? Probably not, but it's probably worth several million. But, you know, in these kind of things, they always pump it way up just to kind of be scary and give themselves negotiation leverage.
You know, even though I thought I knew what a class action lawsuit was, the way you described it and the fact that the monetary amount that the members of the class actually get isn't really all that much by design. That feels so. I mean, that explains my experience with one of them. But But man, I wish.
Well, I mean, it can be like America famously has the asbestos litigation where some people got between 6,000 to 100,000. But generally speaking, the vast majority of class actions, the point is not to get the harmed class members compensation. It's to stop a company from being naughty.
Do you remember the Sony rootkit thing?
The Sony rootkit thing?
There was a time when CDs that you would buy would come with some software on the CD as well as the music. Oh, that's
right.
They
were spying on people or something, right?
Well, no, they would install something onto the computer. This was back in like the days when people were using Windows 2000 or Windows XP. There was software on the computer that would sort of behind the scenes install itself while you were looking at whatever, you know, music video they had stuck on the CD or whatever. And it would basically put itself into your system into an area that was pre the operating system fully loading, which is why these things were called rootkits. The idea being that they kind of existed not like in Windows, but like before Windows. So like really hard to actually get rid of. And this software was there to basically disallow you from ripping their CDs that you've purchased from Sony to your computer and like making MP3s of them. And this was put on everyone's computer without them knowing. So I bought a copy of, what was it? I think it was like a UK, like, garage new wave of rock and roll back when like the Hives and the Strokes and everything were out, band called Kaiser Chiefs or something like that. Yeah, the Kaiser Chiefs. Anyways, I think that like it was like one of their CDs. Anyways, so I owned this CD. I don't know if I ever actually put it in my computer, but I owned it. And all this shit came to life, and I came to light. Sorry, and there's a class action, and yeah, it was one of those weird, scammy sounding I don't know what you call them in the industry, but where they go and then they're like looking for people to join the class, and there's always like, you know, like a goofy website or something attached to it. So like, you know, if you have a Sony CD and it has this on the barcode, then go to like www.sonyowsmebigbucks.org and sign your name up as part of the class. And so I did this, and then the lawsuit was successful, and then I don't know, like a year and a half later, after I don't even remember what this band sounded like, but like Sony sent me a check for $8. And there was something that felt a little bit good about, you know, getting $8, because I didn't do anything. I just put my name on a thing, so that's nice. But on the other hand, it wasn't $800. So that would have been nice. I was a student. You know, you get a random check from big corporation and you're a student and you really hope it's like $800, but sometimes it's not. John, I don't know what you can do to fix that. But anyways, let's talk about Mast Intruder here.
Let's just sue anybody. Let's just randomly sue somebody. Let's do it.
I mean, the other thing, like, John, if you could just mail me a check for $800 and you could put whatever bullshit you want on it, you know, for damages from, you know, years of punk news stress or something, then you know, someone owes me something.
Let's sue the okay, punk news readers.
Oh Jesus, I could. Mast Intruder, they have the band has stated that they are going to release a new EP on the Pure Noise Records label in the summer. It's going to coincide with their appearance on the Vans Warped Tour. The band, they were a little obtuse about their current relationship with Fat Records, who released their last album, MI, in 2014. So there's a statement here from the band. Should I read it? Is that interesting?
Nah, it's really long. I think it just suffices to say is they basically say they're not putting this out on Fat, but they don't say that they're not necessarily with Fat at all anymore. And they don't say anything bad about Fat, but they say they're basically welcoming the opportunity to work with Pure Noise.
Yeah. So anyways, there you go. Mast Intruder is doing a thing. Tom, when you're looking at these young whippersnapper bands, I don't know why I'm making you sound so old, Well, it's because you were talking about your 40-year ban of the story so far or whatever. So I'm just playing off that. So this is a Ramones core act. You know, they do anything for you?
You know, I went and saw them. I've seen them a couple times, but I went and saw them last year and reviewed it. Actually, was with a couple local bands. I do like them, and I'm kind of surprised because I didn't like the second album as much as the first. But they seem, you know, usually a gimmicky act like that doesn't do it for me. But they're a fun live band. I don't mind them. I have both their albums on my device, and when their songs come on, I don't. Yeah, it's a compliment.
I'm never sure how I'm supposed to read this band, because I feel that I'm purposefully ignoring kind of half of the thing that makes them appealing to people, which is to say, I don't really find their lovey-dovey songs all that interesting at all. I like them when they're just being like a fast pop punk band. And I'm pretty sure that like part of their whole thing is the mix, right? Like, we're going to sing songs about committing crimes, and we're also going to sing songs about, how much I love you. And that's their whole thing. But for me, I'm like, I only like half the side of this coin. So
I'm surprised that they're leaving Fat Wreck or not recording with Fat Wreck to date. I've never heard any band that ever say anything bad about Fat Wreck. So that says volumes about Fat Wreck.
I agree with that 100%, John. I've never heard anybody say anything bad about Fat Wreck's business dealings or anything. And they're not either. Maybe they're just doing a one-off EP.
I mean, but the point is, every record label, I don't care how cool the record label is, there's somebody says something bad. There's people that say bad stuff about Discord, you know? And Fat Wreck, like, nobody said anything bad about Fat Wreck. So I guess I think the last Mass Intruder record didn't do as well as people had hoped. And I think that's what, because the band established their gimmick, but they didn't really build off of it. The second Mass Intruder album, it was kind of just like the first, but without the hits. I think what they should have done is, like Adam was saying, was played up the more dangerous side more. That way the sweeter stuff hits harder. Instead of just doing the same thing over again, I thought it would have been cool if like the second record was Mass Intruder Goes to Jail. I mean, there's an entire album right there of how you can there's a ton of ideas of the band in jail and how you can like play with that lyrically and thematically, which they just didn't do. They just did the same exact thing as they did with the first. So I think that's why the Fat record didn't do that well. I don't know that it didn't do that well, but it really didn't seem to blow up like the first one, that's for sure. And so that's my guess is why they're moving on to a different label. Either Fat couldn't give them the money that they wanted, or that Fat necessarily didn't necessarily want to keep them. And Pure Noise, who's trying to, I guess, up their name, probably spent more on them than Fat was willing to do, because maybe Pure Noise is trying to get a bigger name in the biz, if you will. That's just my guess. I have no factual basis for that whatsoever. And let's play a song. Listen, I talked about Rick Wilder before. He was in a band called the Mau Maus. That's a very early LA punk band. Fantastic. I'm going to play a song by the Mau Maus. It's off their album called Then and Now, which is basically all the recorded material. This is a track, and it's interesting because this track pays homage to New York Dolls, the Stooges, and the Sex Pistols. This is Rick Wilder and the Mau Maus doing Laugh Track.
Use. It's the one I've been in.
And we are back and talking about laugh tracks. AC/DC, as you all know, Brian Johnson was either fired or left or is no longer with AC/DC right now because he was facing permanent hearing damage. And it seems as though he felt bummed out that the band just dropped him and decided to move on without him. It's not exactly clear if he's permanently out of AC/DC or just for this tour or whatever, or the relationship between Brian Johnson and the rest of the guys in the band. However, apparently for the remainder of their summer tour, Axl Rose will be fronting AC/DC. There is some precedence for this in that Axl Rose and Guns N' Roses covered AC/DC on one of their early 12-inches. They did a live version of A Whole Lot of Rosie. Of course, Guns N' Roses now reunited again with Slash, and I guess that's kind of a big deal. Tom Trauma, the punk kids, AC/DC is very divisive among the punk community. Some people in the punk community think AC/DC is as punk as it gets, maybe not thematically, but lifestyle-wise, and they rock, and that's a big part of punk rock. And other people think AC/DC is just a big, cheesy stadium rock band. Do you like AC/DC? Do you think Axl Rose replacing Brian Johnson will work? Is it a good idea? Can AC/DC move on without Brian Johnson? Because if you remember, Brian Johnson is technically the band's third singer already.
Yeah, for 36 years.
right, exactly.
You know, that's a lot of questions, John.
Let me say, I do
like AC/DC. I mean, it's not something I listen to a ton, and I tend to listen to like the Bon Scott stuff more. But you can hear their footprint all over like a lot of the British Oi stuff that I love, like The Business, Cockney Rejects, like that. It's not that far removed from like an AC/DC. I never got to see AC/DC. You know, I always come out here and brag about all the many bands I've seen, but I never saw AC/DC. I did, however, see Guns N' Roses in 1992. They did a ginormous stadium tour. I was a young lad of 19. They did a ginormous stadium tour with Metallica. It was Guns N' Roses and Metallica and Faith No More. And I saw them at the Pontiac Silverdome, which is the football stadium that our Detroit Lions play at. And Faith No More was excellent. Metallica was excellent. And then we sat there for like 2 hours waiting for Guns N' Roses to come out and stayed for maybe like an hour. And then we had to go home. And we got home at like 5 a.m. But... So I didn't really have a particularly good experience. Remember, last time I was on, we talked about that Danzig video and all the boobs in it. The Guns N' Roses show had the most boobs I'd ever seen. There were so many boobs. Once again, I got bored with boobs. And I was 19 at the time, so that's really saying something. But anyway, I would rather see AC/DC with Brian Johnson singing than with Axl Rose singing. But, you know, somebody gave me a ticket, I'd go. But I wouldn't pay $100 or whatever. I don't know how many of your individual questions I answered, but anyway.
John has a habit of asking like 7 questions in a row.
Well, I'm trying to give people a prompt and they can pick whatever they like.
Well, you know, I have a morbid curiosity about seeing Guns N' Roses. I don't think I probably will, just because I don't think I would want to devote a ton of money to it. But it's strange because I think Axl sort of got his shit together as far as like actually playing shows on time and stuff, because this show, like I said, that show we saw in Detroit in 92, that was quintessential Axl Rose. Took like 2 hours to get on the stage, came out for a half hour, sang, something was wrong with the sound, threw his microphone down, went backstage, the band jammed for a while before they coaxed him back out. I don't know if that was an act or if that was, but it guy's a disaster, you know, but maybe he pulled it together. He doesn't seem quite as ballooned up as he was like 6 months ago.
Hey, listen, man, needing cash will do that to you. I'll tell you that. Listen,
I don't think he needs cash. He was.
Oh, I think he needs cash. I think
that band was
cash.
Is still in the golden era, dude. You know, they just talked about how many vinyl records were sold in the entire last year, and it was 11 million or 16 million of every band last year. Let's say it's 16. There were 16 million albums sold. Guns N' Roses sold, Appetite for Destruction sold like 15 million albums. I mean, those guys made money. That was real. That was when the music industry was, you know, you were snorting cocaine out of a hooker's ass crack. That was the golden era.
I hear you, Tom, but honestly, I know personally, it's easier to blow 100 million than you think. I don't know that personally. But I mean, honestly, I think it's not that difficult to blow 100 million or 50 million in like 20 years.
Yeah, well, I think he blew like 20 million making Chinese Democracy, but.
Well, yeah. Anyway, listen, AC/DC rocks. I've seen them twice. I saw them in 2003 and 2005. They kicked ass. I agree with Tom Trauma that the Bon Scott era is better than the Brian Johnson era, but Brian Johnson is fantastic. I would not go see this unless I got in for free. I do think, actually, as a replacement for Brian Johnson, Axl Rose is actually a good pick. He's a good singer. He kind of can mimic the Brian Johnson sound, not so much the Bon Scott sound. And he's a rocker. And basically, he's a name that people know. And he is talented, even though he's a jerk. He is talented. You got to give him that. So it's a good pick on the part of the band. Would I go see it? No, because I don't really want to see. AC/DC, honestly, is old these days. There's only like two remaining members now, Angus Young and Cliff Williams. And like Malcolm Young is out of the band. The drummer's out of the band. Brian Johnson's out of the band. And so it's really just the Angus Young show. And so I'd rather I saw AC/DC at the end of the height of their power. So I don't really want to see kind of a sad dog and pony show, if you will. What I was going to say, though, is I think what underscores this is people like to imagine that all their favorite bands are like a gang and they all hang out together and they're all best friends. And the fact is, after bands get on for a number of years, the majority of it of them becomes a business relationship and they don't even really know each other that well. Like the only time Brian Johnson sees AC/DC is when they're about ready to record. They don't talk to each other. They don't mail each other. And so it kind of destroys the mystique of a band. They're not a gang. They're really just, you know, co-workers, if you will, which does change the band's, I guess, underlying spirit, if you will. And I feel for Brian Johnson because you can tell he was torn up by being kicked out, kicked to the curb. And what can you say? Adam, did you have any comments?
Actually, he just released a statement, John. I hate to.
No, that's a backtrack, though. That's a backtrack because he wants to keep his business relations open.
It could be. But so, okay, if you had your choice right now, reunited Guns N' Roses or AC/DC with Axl singing?
See, I actually like Guns N' Roses less than I used to for some reason. I mean, if I had to go see them.
Guns N' Roses has one great album and a bunch of...
I'd go see Guns N' Roses because I've never seen Guns N' Roses because it's Axl and Slash. I've seen AC/DC, and it would just depress me that Brian Johnson isn't there and Axl is. So Guns N' Roses is easy.
There's nothing wrong with AC/DC, but that you almost have to admire the fact they're kind of Ramones-esque in that they make the same album over and over again. I mean, AC/DC literally has made millions and millions of hundreds of millions of dollars making the same dick joke over and over again. You sort of have to admire it in a way. I mean, not in a, like, artistically creative way, but in a sort of pure chutzpah, as you like to say, or chutzpah. How do you say that?
Chutzpah. Well, speaking of a sad joke, the Drive Like Yeehoo curated All Tomorrow's Party Fest has been canceled, and not only has it been canceled, it was canceled like 2 weeks before it's set to take place, which is crazy. This is a very big festival, a lot of money's put into it, and it was just canceled out of the blue. The reason for cancellation was due to financial difficulties, and the followers John Cale pulling out for financial difficulties. It's suspected that they weren't able to pay John Cale what he requested to be paid. Adam, I know you're a big fan of Drive Like Yeehoo. This was not in your neck of the woods, this was out in England, but what did this say to you? Is this a big deal?
This was in Wales. So if it was, does that count as in England or is that in Britain? I'm never sure. I feel like I'm going to mix one up and insult like.
It's not England. It is Britain with a T-O-N and it's the UK.
See, I knew it. We were going to get a letter. I feel completely geographically unable to comment about this. There's a part of me that was looking at this and going, oh, well, the problem is that they wanted to have this cool festival somewhere in Wales. And what's in Wales? And the answer is that I have no idea what's in Wales. So maybe there's a place that, you know, everyone wants to come together and listen to a bunch of Swami Records bands, but maybe not. I don't know. So All Tomorrow's Parties is for those in the U.S., I guess, it's a festival that runs on two or three weekends, I think, over the summer. And each of the weekends that it runs, it gets a different band to act as a curator, or a different band, a different person from, I guess, the arts community to act as a curator, which then, I guess, informs which bands they book for it and what the general vibe of it is. So usually the ATP festivals don't really fall anywhere on our radar. This one totally does, just because of the lineup that was supposed to play it, which was, there was Metz, he had two King Khan bands that were playing, both the Shrines and his barbecue show band with Mark Salton. You have Wire, a classic UK punk act. You had Hot Snakes, which is, you know, of course, related to the Drive Like Yeehoo family. Mission of Burma, another classic act. And then, yeah, John Cale, the Velvet Underground on there. So this was a pretty killer lineup from, you know, if you want to make a lineup of bands that I would really like to go see in one place. I have no idea what the commercial viability of something like this is for, I guess, the wider music population. And maybe the fact that they had to cancel this for financial reasons is, maybe that's reality kind of crashing into it, where, like, you know, me and a bunch of people on the internet would really like to go see, you know, an entire event that is based on the tastes of Swami John Rice, but does enough people to make a music festival happen want to go do that specifically in Wales? I guess probably not. So, you know, this was, by the way, not in 2 weeks. This was like at the end of this week. Like this festival was like imminent. And I honestly was like thinking, like, man, like all these bands must have, you know, way in the past have spent money for like flights and things like that, wouldn't they?
Yeah, I would think that, actually, good question. Usually the music festival will front the money for the tickets, but maybe for some bands they didn't, in which case maybe you want to consider suing the music festival, because I mean, no reason they need to be out $2,000 or $3,000, you know what I mean?
Well, yeah, but like I imagine, like I don't know, let's say you're the guy that sells merch for like the King Kong and barbecue show. Like, I don't know if, you know, the festival's paying for that guy's flight or whatever. Like, I imagine there's still like a bunch of people that have committed that now have, you know, have a nice Welsh vacation sprung on them because they have to go. But yeah, I don't know. That sucks for this. I don't want to see anything happen to like discourage the future creative output of John Rice. So, you know, I feel bad that his shit got canceled here. If he wants to move it to Niagara Falls, he can totally sleep here. But that's
sure
all I got.
I'm sure it'd be much more lucrative there.
It probably would be.
I'll tell you, though, it is sad that the All Tomorrow's Party Festival in Wales had to cancel John Cale, because it's so fitting. I mean, it couldn't be more fitting. Because he's from Wales, and it's named after a Velvet Underground song, and John Cale was in the Velvet Underground.
Uh-huh.
Guys.
So Fest is happening.
Pearls before Swine. John Cale's cool.
I gotta tell you, I feel like swine when I hear that lineup, because I'm like, oh, that sounds kind of boring. I mean,
dude, no, listen, kids. If you guys haven't listened to the Velvet Underground, listen to the Velvet Underground. I'm going somewhere with this, Tom. Listen to White Light, White Heat. That is a phenomenal album. Check out Lou Reed's Rock and Roll Animal. Check out Lou Reed's Transformer. But also check out John Cale, who's kind of the other main guy in Velvet Underground. You want to check out his album, is it Fear, which is an amazing album. I think Brian Eno had a part of it. He also check out John Cale's live album called Sabotage. And it's kind of John Cale doing punk rock. It's an amazing song. And of course, check out the very first Stooges album produced by Mr. John Cale.
There you go.
I'll listen to that Stooges album again, but that's it.
Again. All right. So we're talking a little bit about Fest here. The lineup for Fest 15, the initial lineup has been announced. This thing is going to go down in two stages again, just like they did last year, where there is going to be the big pre-fest in Little Ybor is going to take place from October 26th to 27th in Ybor City, Florida. I assume that's Ybor and not Ybor. But
I think it's Ybor, but I'm not even sure.
Ybor, yeah. Well, it's a Welsh name, right? So it's hard to pronounce. And then the actual fest is going to happen from October 28th to 30th in Gainesville. Of course, the lineup for this year includes a huge, big, long list of bands, and I am going to run through a bunch of them right now. The big name at the top of the list, the big get, I guess, for Fest this year is Winnipeg, Manitoba political punk act Propagandhi. And then they've also got Less Than Jake playing, Strike Anywhere, Off With Their Heads, Latterman, A Wilhelm Scream, Knapsack, Sam I Am, Flatliners, Braid, Tim Barry of Avail, Dead to Me, The Menzingers, AJJ, I can't even say that. AJJ, let's say it that way. Actress January Jones, I don't know why they wouldn't just stick with that. Shell Shag, Small Brown Bike, Pairs, Toy Guitar, so lots of fat rec bands that are playing this thing. And then you know, tons of others, depending, you know, what you want to see. There's a lot of stuff on this list. If you want your ska, you've got Mustard Plug playing there. If you like your No Idea stuff, you've got Planes Mistaken for Stars. Of course you've got the buddies Jeff Rosenstock and Chris Farron each playing this thing. You know, John's friends, the Max Levine Ensemble, are going to be there. War on Women. There is a million bands on this list, so you should probably go to punknews.org and check it out, because it is quite lengthy. And knowing Fest, it is like the first of several giant list updates that you're going to see. So definitely go to Punk News, look up Fest. You'll see this whole list, and you could probably pick out a pretty cool list of bands that are playing this thing. Shit, like I keep leaving off cool bands here. Toys That Kill, Nightbirds, there's lots. So yeah, yeah, the Unlovables are on here. Who else we got?
Haley Bullet, Punk News compatriot.
Yeah, Haley Bullet's band there.
No, that's Unlovables and Mike Yerg.
Yeah. With Mike Yerg, right?
Indeed.
So anyways, yes, lots of stuff. And the cool thing about Fest is that there's always, like, I feel like there's little core groups of people that are going to get excited about this or that. So I imagine there's a lot of people, for example, that are excited about, you know, Planes Mistaken for Stars getting back together and playing it. And to me, that'd be a really cool show, because, like, you're right, No Idea Country. Oh, man, there's a lot of bands on this list. Underground Railroad, the Candyland, is doing it.
If you're a Todd Congeliere fan, there's a lot of Todd Congeliere. There's Toys That Kill, Underground Railroad to Candyland, and actually, if you're a fan of Todd Congeliere, stay tuned to Punk News. We got something kind of cool coming up on that too. And Pairs, you know, a lot of people are a fan of Pairs, Ricky's favorite band.
Yeah, so you know, there you go. Lots of crazy shit going on with Fest. So by all means, go take a look at that, and you know, go to Gainesville. It's a good time. So yeah,
I think that wraps it up, Adam.
Does that wrap it up? Anything else you guys want to talk about? Anyone else having a crisis or problem or anything? You guys okay?
Man, my life's a nonstop crisis. My life's a problem, Adam. My life's a problem.
Oh, well, okay. I'm going to try to make it better, but you're going to have to kind of bear with it a little bit, because this is a live recording that I'm going to play with you. So this is from a band that is a super group, really, of sorts, that was formed up in Ottawa, called Cheap Wine. Wine is N-W-H-I-N-E. So Cheap Wine is a three-piece. It is Eric of the band Feral Trash from Moncton, New Brunswick. It is Steve Ademic of the Steve Ademic Band of the Million Dollar Marxists. And then it is Jordy Bell of Crusades and the Creeps. So these three guys have got together. They play as Cheap Wine. This is a live recording of them playing at the House of Targ venue in Ottawa, which is the pinball parlor / pierogi restaurant that all the punk rock bands play in Ottawa. So this is Cheap Wine playing, I don't know the name of the song, and they're playing at House of Targ. And it's a live recording, but it's some cool stuff. So, you know, one day we'll hear something out of the studio from these guys. But, you know, check this out. We'll be right back.
And that was Cheap Wine, Adam White bringing the rare tracks. Tom Trauma, thanks for being on. Tom Trauma, you going to any cool gigs in the next couple of weeks?
Yeah, a couple things coming up. I'm going to see the Reverend Horton Heat next week, and I think the week after that I'm going to see a pretty cool metal show. So, you know, I'll keep you updated.
What metal show?
Weed Eater, Today's the Day, Author and Punisher.
I've seen Weed Eater. Cool. Adam White, thanks for being on. Are you going to any cool gigs? Or are you just going to go out and get a track jacket and learn how to skateboard?
The only thing that I can do is to try to emulate the people that are doing things better than me. So I'm going to study, and I'm gonna try to do it.
Very well. I'm seeing World Inferno on Friday. I am super excited. World Inferno, a lot of things in the work with that band. Check out World Inferno. And as always, you can reach us at podcast@punknews.org. And we will see you. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.
Yeah, just before we get out of here, because I keep forgetting to do this. You know, thanks to the bands for letting us play the music that we're playing and not suing us.
You can sue us.
And yeah, I mean, thanks also to our producer, Greg Simpson, for putting up with this shit week on week, and also for not suing us. So there you go.